Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to Book Cheat, the book club podcast where I've read the book so you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnicki, and on each episode of this show, we look at one of the classics. And joining me to look at the classic this week from the Human Ordinary podcast, it's Sam Loy.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. And joining Sam and I from the Weekly Planet podcast, it's Nick Mason.
Woo!
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you all. A round of applause. Appreciate it.
Can I just point out that, Nick, you were the biggest applauder of both Sam and yourself.
I was the instigator, yes, yeah. That's true. I was trying to get a movement going. I'm so sorry. Woo! Here's one for Dave. Applause for Dave as well. Yeah, there we go.
All right, I've got to clap too. Otherwise... Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't realize we were clapping, or else I would have. You know, I promise.
No, I regret my decision instantly. I'm like, this is going to pop on the audio. Dave's going to have to fix this in post.
Should we start again with a few more or less claps? No, I love a clap. Love a clap. Good energy to start. We're recording this on a Sunday morn.
Yeah.
We are raring to go.
big day. Big weekend for politics.
Yes, that's
over
right.
Over here, but we're going to put it out of our minds.
That's right.
And talk about a classic.
Some classic politics.
Yes. No,
a classic book. But thank you so much for joining me. Sam, it's your first time on the show. So yeah. I usually ask people if they are a big reader now or they've ever been a big reader in the past, because basically I started the show because I used to be a big reader when I was growing up, dropped off for a few years, and I'm forcing myself back into the world of reading.
Good for you. Well, then I wish that I also had a Book Cheat podcast to do. Because I used to, what do they call it, a vociferous reader?
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. Okay. I think I may have met my match.
I think I'm going to quietly leave and leave you boys to it.
There you go.
If you could vociferously leave, am I using that right, Sam?
Sure, yeah. Hey, when in Rome. So I used to read heaps. But now I don't read at all. I think the last thing I read was a recipe.
So, oh!
Yeah.
Can you tell me what the recipe was for?
It was for a vociferous lentil stew. Am I using that right, guys? Yes, I am.
And a Cajun chicken, I think it was.
Oh, delicious. Yeah, yeah. Did you just read the recipe and get hungry and then get takeaway, or did you actually cook the Cajun chicken?
No, I just had a couple of minutes to spare, so I thought I'll read this.
One of the fastest things to read.
Yeah.
I should say on the recipe, you know, it takes 5 minutes for preparation, 20 to cook, 1 minute to read. That's how they should say how long it
Very
takes.
Very good, yes. Yeah, yeah. So, no, I haven't read anything in quite a while. It seems that actually podcasting has destroyed my life, actually. So.
Yeah, well, we should quickly talk about
Amen.
Your podcast, Human Ordinary. I mean, it's a great podcast, and we all know that podcasts take time, but yours takes a lot more time than nearly all the other podcasts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've done it to myself, though, haven't I? So, yeah. Because, I mean,
You've gone the extra mile.
You know, doing these audio documentaries, so, yeah. It does take a bit. I was probably thinking, like, I reckon there's probably about 40 hours in each episode, which is, like, a lot. And it's stupid, though. It's really stupid.
40. And how many in the latest season?
How many episodes?
Yeah.
There'll be 16, but not all just me.
Because you have a team now.
I've got a team.
Three more producers, yeah.
Yes.
Because how else could you do 16 times 40 hours?
Yeah. That's crazy.
I've stopped reading recipes. Yeah. It's been a waste of my life, and I'm just going to make more shows.
That's 1 minute extra each day for you there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
And your producers are all around the world now, so all about the place. So you can do an episode about people who foam at the mouth for, you know, over trains.
That's right.
In America.
And the next one, which will be out in a week from now, is set in Indian Kashmir. So,
wow, that's cool.
Yeah, so we've got stories from all over, and it's quite exciting. But yeah, no time to read, unfortunately.
Fair enough. Yeah. How about you, mate? So any time to read since I've last had you on the show? Have you been reading?
Every time I come on this show, I struggle to remember something I've read. But it's not that I don't read novels. I think I read a lot of my... dumb passion in books is, I think, like books about clothes and the history of clothes. So I've been reading recently a book, it's called True Fit, the Collected History of Denim, and it's about like the history of like jeans and denim and like people who like go through old gold mines trying to find like old miners' jeans and like sell them to like collectors and sell them to like...
Really?
Like, people, yeah.
People do that?
Yeah, like so like, yeah, yeah, that's the thing. They're called pickers, and they'll go to like old like warehouses and like, you know, burnt out buildings and gold mines and stuff, and then they'll find like an old pair of jeans from like 1901, and then they'll go to like a Ralph Lauren or like a fashion brand and be like, this is for your archive. And then the fashion brand will be like, okay, well, this is how a gold miner would wear out their jeans. And, you know, this is how where the rips and tears would be. And then they just kind of copy it and sell it for hundreds of dollars. Wow. And that's kind of like...
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so that's
really interesting stuff.
Yeah, that's a... It's a well, yeah, so it's like... it's kind of like... It's like the aesthetic is fascinating because it's like people in old pickup trucks like driving out to the Old West, and they've all got big beards, yep, and they all dress the part. They all have like those big dungarees with suspenders and like...
That's what I was going to say, like those overall
yeah,
kind of
they
things.
Have those. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they sort of live the life, and it's all like dusty roads and it's fascinating to me that they're going to old gold mines, but they're not finding gold.
Yeah.
They're finding pants.
They're finding pants.
Yeah.
With the big pockets in the front where you can store like chewing tobacco and a bowl of prawns or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's
really interesting.
So I read a lot of those. So it's like they're all sort of like midway between like a real like a book and like a coffee table book. They're like large format, kind of like a lot of text, a lot of pictures.
Wow.
Which is my happy medium. Well, less text, more pictures, you know?
Well, actually, I should have said that. The books that I have read lately, because we read every day to our kids, so... And they're like that. A lot of pictures.
Yeah, that's right.
A few words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Find your happy place. That's what I say.
Yes. A lot of denim?
Yeah.
Not so much. Well, not so much. Or maybe in Two Tough Teddies, yeah, which is a riveting page turner that we read.
I was
going to
say, look
recently
at the rivets on these. Look at the...
Oh, very nice.
Well, I'll tell you what I've been reading lately, and that is the subject of this week's episode.
Oh.
And I've decided to go with another Shakespeare.
Ooh.
So this is the third one I've done on the show. So I started with Othello.
Uh-huh.
And I did Hamlet previously with you, Nick Mason.
Yes, that's right.
You are one of my Shakespearean experts.
Thank you.
thank you for coming back. And people are able to suggest books or plays or novels or whatever that I can do. And this one has been suggested by Paris Drinkwater from Newcastle.
Oh, that's a great name.
It's a fantastic name.
Awesome.
I've actually met Paris a couple of times at live Do Go On shows. So.
And that's a name that somebody would name their kid in Newcastle. Bit of romance, you know.
So a big shout out to Paris for your ongoing support. Thank you very much. If people can write why I should do a text, and she wrote, "This is why I should do The Tempest." I read it in high school and really loved it, and I think other people would love it, and they would love it even more if they didn't have to read Shakespeare.
Brutal.
It's a perfect book cheat book. So thank you, Paris. And if anyone out there wants to suggest a book or play, there's a little link in the description of this episode if you want to click that, and maybe I will do that next time. But The Tempest, this week's episode, do you have much knowledge of The Tempest, Meso?
Here's the thing. When you mention The Tempest, I'm like, did I read that in school or not read it in school?
Oh.
So I feel like...
You may or may not have read it.
I may or may not have read it, but clearly it didn't make that much impact, and I'm curious as to why. Is there a wizard in it?
Yes, it's a very magical play, this one. Ooh, yes.
A wizard in it. Okay, nice. So I know that much.
Okay.
Is there a Tempest in it?
Good question.
My goodness. I mean... The whole point of the show is that I tell you about it, but if you know everything about it...
We've got a wizard, we've got a tempest. Yeah.
I mean, they're the basic themes, wizardry and tempestry.
Mm-hmm.
But
is it about, right, Sam? It's about a wizard and he makes a weather-changing machine and it's up to Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman to stop him.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's the plot of the movie The Avengers.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's basically it.
All right, cool.
And you can see the similarities here. Shakespeare really ripped off that comic. But so The Tempest was written by Shakespeare in around 1611. It's one of his last plays, written 5 years before he died. Originally, allegedly died. Or
Was I a big Shakespeare truther last time on this podcast? I wonder. Was he even real? Yeah. Was he?
Well, it's actually pointed at as probably the last play that he wrote alone.
Mm.
So other ones have since been. Oh, that was a collaboration, but this is probably the last one that he wrote alone.
All right.
With like Pitbull.
Yeah. Mr. Worldwide.
Yeah, okay. You can always tell the Pitbull verse is coming up in a Shakespeare play.
Shake feet, Pitbull.
Yes.
Now, originally Shakespeare's works were published together as his first folio, the famous first folio, and they were divided into three categories, tragedies, histories, or comedy plays. And The Tempest was originally classified as a comedy, but look out for that.
Hang on, okay. I don't know any wizards in comedy.
Yeah, right.
Magic is not funny.
No. It's amazing.
But these days, scholars mostly classify it as a romance play because magic, very sexy.
That's right. Sure is. Yep.
So, I don't know, at the end you can probably tell me if you think it's funnier or sexier or possibly both.
So we have the responsibility, are we going to reclassify Shakespeare again?
You can classify
All right.
Nice one. Well, I hope it's like a sci-fi horror, actually.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you can, whatever genre you want to put it into, that's totally
fine. Wait, this was a cookbook the whole time. Wait a second.
Well, that would appeal, right?
Recognise that Cajun chicken recipe?
Well, our play opens, Act 1, Scene 1.
Oh.
He's conventional.
That's a good place to start.
Yeah, I know, right?
Mm. Our play opens on a ship.
May I interrupt before we get started?
Please.
Do any Shakespeare plays do that device where they start at the end and then it's like, but that's me, but guess how I got here kind of thing, and then they wind back to the start? Is that a modern device, I wonder?
Well, Romeo and Juliet kind of does. It gives you away the end.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay.
And then it jumps back. But
That's why a bit of poetry at the start there. Yeah, okay. A bit of a long time ago on a galaxy far, far away.
That's a few star-crossed lovers.
Bit of a spoiler. All right. Yeah, good.
Star Wars crossed
Welcome
lovers.
Welcome to Romeo and Juliet, folks. They both die at the end. One pretends to kill themselves, and then the other one does, and then the other one double does.
That's right. But it's a great story.
And on with the play.
Yeah. Guys, Baz Luhrmann did it with guns. Whoa.
All right, sorry, act one, scene one.
Our play opens on a ship, caught in a wild storm.
Oh, a tempest?
A tempest, if you will, please. Which, if people aren't familiar with that, that's where the play gets its title from. A tempest is a wild storm.
Should have been called A Tempest then.
No, but this is the most important tempest ever. It's the tempest.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. All right. Okay.
Or possibly in this world, the only tempest that's ever. They're very confused as to what's happening. The people on board are Italian, and you know that because all their names end in O. We've got Alonso, Antonio, Gonzalo, Stefano, Trinculo.
Well, now they're just taking the piss. Gonzalo.
Gonzalo, yeah.
Got it, no. He ran out halfway through and he went, Gonzalo?
Well, he did run out because there's also two other guys, Ferdinand and Sebastian.
Okay, all right.
Right.
Oh, I don't know. Look, that's a lot of names there, and I don't want to confuse you or the listeners with too many names early on, but the important ones here are, there's four, and if you later on, I'll try and remind you, but if you have no idea, we can keep going over it. Alonso is the King of Naples, the most important person on the boat.
Very good, okay, very good. All right.
Then Sebastian, who I just mentioned, he's the King's brother.
All right.
Or also quite important. Ferdinand, who's the King's son.
Okay.
Next in line to the throne. And then also Antonio, who is the Duke of Milan.
Oh, okay.
Sexy. Mm-hmm.
So there are four main ones that I should point out there.
So Naples has got a king. Is this historically accurate? Did Naples have a king? Is this a thing?
Yes, it seems to be divided at the time, Italy, into separate areas. I mean, Shakespeare's not always historically accurate. Sometimes I remember in a previous one I've done here, Othello was talking about fighting against... I don't know, the Turks or something, and then I read into it and was like, oh, no, they were never at war during this time. So we sort of just sometimes
make stuff up.
Yeah, exactly.
How dare he? Yeah.
That's how easy it is.
Oh, my goodness. All right. I've actually been to Naples. Oh. Yeah, little tidbit there.
Did you meet the king?
I did not. No, he was busy. I went over and they're like, he's just ducked out for some sugar. And I was like, oh, no. Yeah, Naples sugar too. Some of the best sugar.
The good stuff.
Yeah.
So they're caught in the tempest and they're on their way back from a wedding in Africa where King Alonso's daughter has just married a Tunisian prince. So that's why they're there. They were in good spirits, but now they're caught in a wild storm.
Does she get a look in or is she just done for the rest of the play? Do we see that?
I'm afraid she does not come back.
Okay, wow.
I'm so sorry.
Wow.
I mean,
so there's potential for a side story.
Yeah,
there.
Definitely.
Like what happened in Africa. You know?
Bit of a spin-off.
She's
never mentioned again.
Does she start her own like airborne cargo company, like Tailspin?
I'm going to go with yes.
The cartoon Tailspin? Yeah. Is that? Okay, all right. It's Tailspin. Okay. That's canon now. If we're revising stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Put it in your essay, guys. Put it in your essay.
That's right.
Just like Tailspin... dot, dot, dot. So they're on the, they're panicking they're going to die, basically, because it's such a wild storm. Everyone is, except for a character known simply as the Boatswain, who was a super relaxed crew member. They remind him to think about who was on board. The king, for God's sake. They say, the king's on board. Think about it. He replies, quote, "None that I love more than myself. If you can command these elements to silence and work the peace of the present, we will not hand a rope more. Use your authority," end quote. Basically, if he was that important, the king, then why doesn't he use his power to stop this storm?
Oh.
But why didn't he just say that?
Now, there's a lot of flowery language there, but I've immediately imagined the Boatswain as like a Matthew McConaughey, like a real laid-back dude, because he's like, I don't love no one more than myself, you know? Just be cool, guys.
Everything is said like whistling through his teeth.
Yeah, it's going
to
be fine.
He's basically like, shut the hell up whilst I try and save our lives, all right? The noblemen leave to pray for the king and they're all basically prepared to die. And that is the opening scene. Boom, straight in there.
Whoa, titles.
Yeah.
The Tempest.
The Tempest. Starring Matthew McConaughey as Boatswain.
Do you reckon like all the boatswains, their name is Wayne and they just work on boats? So they go, hey, that's the Boatswain. And then there's the Paddock Wayne and the Stable Wayne.
Trains Wayne.
Trains Wayne.
Mm.
And the Cox Wayne, but we won't ask what he does.
He'll never tell. Scene two is much calmer by comparison. It takes place on the land of a nearby island where a man named Prospero.
Wizard. It's a wizardly name. I reckon that's the wizard.
That's a good guess. That is the wizard. He's watching the ship caught in the storm with his daughter, Miranda. What do you think of that name?
Daughter of a wizard. I'm calling it.
It's a magical name, wizard. Miranda.
Yeah, isn't it? Picnic in Hanging Rock.
Miranda!
I hope there is a character screaming at Miranda in this play.
Well, Miranda asks her father to make sure that no one's been killed by the shipwreck, and he tells her that no one has. But how does he know?
Wizardry.
And then mysteriously tells her it's about time she found out who she really is.
Ooh.
This is a sci-fi.
Yeah, right?
It is taking her back to a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. In Milan. Miranda is keen to hear more and even says that many a time her father has started this story but stopped before completing it. But he tells her this time, she'll hear it all. He starts his story and every few sentences he asks her if she's still listening. She's like, yeah. He's like, but are you listening? She's like, yeah, this is such a great story. She literally says it could cure deafness. It's such a great story. And he's like, but are you listening?
He seems cripplingly insecure, this
honestly,
guy.
Honestly, it's at least four times he stops and like this quite interesting story about her life. And she's like, I think she's a teenager maybe.
She's texting.
Yeah. He's like, come on, you with me? I mean, she's too cool for this bedtime story. Prospero asked her if she has any memory of how they got to the island, as it happened before she was 3 years old. She doesn't remember their old life, and is surprised when Prospero tells her that he was once a very powerful man, the Duke of Milan.
Ooh, hang on. We've already met a Duke of Milan.
Yeah, oh.
Hang on a second.
But he was the previous Duke of Milan. Prospero wasn't that interested in politics, however, and he gave some of his power to his brother, Antonio, who was one of the guys on the ship we saw in the storm. That Duke of Milan. What happened was Antonio got a little too big for his boots, and with Alonso, the King of Naples, they plotted to get rid of Prospero so Antonio could replace him as the Duke. Stabbed his brother in the back.
Whoa, look out. Mm.
So wait, at this point, has Prospero seen anybody on the shipwreck? Does he know who's in the shipwreck?
We don't know yet.
Magic.
Is this just a big coincidence?
Yes.
But how does he know no one's dead?
He's guessing.
Yeah. That could, he just doesn't want to upset his daughter. That could be a thing.
They've all gone to live on a farm, I can tell from over here.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, they're having a great time. They love storms. An army marched on Milan to drive out Prospero and to kick him out of town. But because Prospero was loved by the people, remember, he's the one telling the story, so we don't know if this is true, if he's just big-noting himself to his daughter. He says that some people prepared a crappy little raft for him and his daughter to escape on. He describes it as a rotten carcass of a boat that even rats had left because they knew how dangerous it was. You did not want to get on this boat.
Is that the origin of the phrase, rats leaving a sinking ship?
It possibly could be.
Or maybe that was the thing beforehand. I imagine there was no shortage of rats leaving sinking ships in Shakespeare's time. He may not have invented that.
He invented a lot of phrases, a few of which I'll go over at the end.
All right.
A few things he coined, but I did not come across that phrase. All but right, maybe. Okay. Mm. I mean, he's that good.
Yeah.
The original Will I Am.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the only reason
Will I Thus.
The only reason they survived on this carcass of a boat was because it was equipped with supplies of food, clothing, water, and magic books by a man named Gonzalo, who was also in the large boat just caught in the tempest.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, it's such a coincidence here, I tell you what. So that's Miranda's episode of Who Do You Think You Are Taking Care Of.
Wait, are they magic books because they have magic like inside them, like you can learn, or are they the books themselves, like magic, like they get up and fly through the air? And
I think it's more like spells and such. Okay. But I wouldn't put it past these books to fly.
Yeah.
It could happen.
It'd be pretty cool. Flying book.
You better believe it.
Definitely true.
You wouldn't think they'd kick him out of the country, though, if he had flying books.
Yeah, no.
You'd hope not.
Yeah.
You'd hope he'd become also, like a sideshow at a circus.
Yeah,
or something.
Also, you probably wouldn't need a raft if you had a flying book. Latch on.
Yep.
Leave zip, you, zip about.
Leave your infant daughter behind.
Yeah, that's right.
Into a flying book.
No, she'd have a little book as well.
Yeah, no. It's a bit like the Dora
and
Titanic.
She'd have one of those four-page books, you know, the big cardboard ones.
Yeah, I know them well.
Mm. Oh, your kids have magic books.
Yep. Plenty of magic books at my home. Yep. You put them down, you come back, and they're torn in two pieces.
Right. Just,
as if by magic.
Magic. Yeah. So Prospero, that's her backstory explained to her.
This and happened. He's waited. How old is she?
So she was just under 3 and 12 years have gone past, so she's nearly 15 now.
Okay. And for the last 12 years she's been like, Dad, can you explain why we're on this island?
And he always starts and then just trails off and then walks away. Dad,
I can see this island's like 10 feet wide. I can see you over there. You're just standing there. Answer me, Dad.
And then,
but now he's chosen the point where there's been a shipwreck and there's stuff to do. And he's like, well, now it's time.
Now it's time. And also, even though she's obviously desperate to know, he's like, are you listening? She's like, Dad, just don't walk away. So he tells her it's such a stroke of luck that their enemies have miraculously crashed near their island. But that's a long story, and now she's sleepy, so she does just fall asleep.
Bored now, Dad. Bye. Yeah.
So maybe it is something you need to keep engaging her, or she will fall asleep during your long story. That's why he's never got to the end before, because other times he hasn't said, are you listening, and yelled in her face, and she's fallen asleep on him, I imagine.
Yeah. Mm.
So she's asleep. Then Prospero calls for his spirit, Ariel, to appear.
Ariel. Like the Little Mermaid.
Yes. I tell you, he's ripping off people left, right, and centre.
Yeah,
guy.
Right. Disney is going to be on him. His their lawyers are going to be on
they're
him. Real, quick
they've
smart.
Got good lawyers too. It turns out the Prospero is a bit of a magic man, and his spirit, Ariel, acts on his behalf. It turns out that he got Ariel to create the storm around the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just a coincidence, guys. Mm-hmm. He was in control of the Tempest.
The Tempest Maker.
Yes. Yeah. Would have been a better title as well. On Prospero's orders, he makes all the noblemen abandon ship. This is Ariel with the storm. And then splits them up and washes them ashore on different parts of the island.
Ooh.
So they're
a Hunger Games situation.
Yeah, it is. Well, they're in a few groups here. So the king's son, Ferdinand, the next in line to the throne, the prince is all alone. The ship's crew, including the boatswain, didn't abandon ship as they were prepared to go down with it. So they are still on board but are now docked safely in a secluded part of the island.
Mm.
Oh, Death Cove. The safest place on the island.
And the other noblemen, including King Alonso and Prospero's dodgy brother Antonio, are in a third spot on the island. So it is obviously quite a large island.
Yeah.
They're all split apart. Also, the other ships that were in their group thought that their ship crashed and sunk in the storm, so no one is going to send any search parties to look for them.
How convenient.
So it literally is all wrapped up in a neat little package at this stage.
Okay, let's go rescue that ship. Oh, I don't have any mobile phone service.
Yeah, oh, well. Oh dear.
Let's just abandon this.
I mean, it was only the king.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Don't worry about it, yeah. But I guess at that era, everybody's like, maybe I could be the king.
Yeah.
The king's dead.
There's only like 20 people back then.
Yeah, exactly. I'm now next in line. I'm number 19. He's like, the king.
Are you sure you're king? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
He definitely died. Or he's on another island and what are the odds he'll ever get back? So
how
I'm the king now.
He can't get back. No, and if exactly. he is, I'll play dumb.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I thought you were gone. We're all, so Prospero's stoked with his spirit Ariel's work. He did a good job.
High five, Ariel.
Yeah.
But Ariel reminds his master that he said if he did do a good job, that he'd be rewarded by having a year of his service taken off because he's basically a slave.
Right.
Oh. What is he though? He's a spirit.
He's a spirit, yeah. Okay.
And he's a he.
Mm.
Okay.
Hmm.
All right.
That's right.
All right.
But he's able to transform himself to many different
forms.
Yeah.
Has he done that yet, or is that to come?
Well, he did. Well, he transformed himself into a storm in a way. Yeah.
He's the Tempest.
He's the Tempest.
Yeah. I should have called it Ariel the Tempest.
Yeah. I mean,
much better.
He should have workshopped this title. Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to your mind. I imagine he goes, the Tempest. That sounds deep.
Yeah, it could mean many number of things. Maybe he could be like, people will think it's a metaphor, so I'm going to put it out there.
And then the opening scene is, oh my God, the Tempest. It's less than subtle. It really is. So he's like, you promised me a year off my work here, if I did a good job, and I think I did a good job. And Prospero gets annoyed, who sees Ariel as ungrateful and reminds him that he was the one that rescued him.
Oh.
Before Prospero had arrived at the island, he was a spirit in service of a witch. But when he objected to doing evil things, she, the witch, placed him inside a tree as a prison, but then herself died and he was stuck there for 12 years before Prospero arrived and freed him from the tree.
And made him do not evil things like causing the shipwreck.
Yeah, no, he's happy for that.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a genie in a lamp situation.
Mm.
And now he's sort of indebted to his service. Ariel backs down and thanks his master before being given a new job, which is to disguise himself as an invisible sea nymph that only Prospero can see, which to me sounds like Prospero has a bit of a fetish for sea nymphs.
Yep.
If it's going to be invisible to everyone else, who cares what he looks like?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Be a sea nymph, yeah. No one else can see it, but I can.
Yeah, just be a real sexy lady. Yeah, nice. Only I can see you, though.
Yeah.
Settle down. All right? Just me. It's for me.
It's a weird request. I've got to be honest. It's a weird request.
Mm.
Then another servant enters, this one named Caliban.
Also a spirit or a regular man?
Well, he's described as half human and half monster, as he is the daughter of a witch who used to be on the island and a devil.
Oh, look out.
Caliban.
Would you describe him as indescribably ugly? Is that, we get any description?
I'd attempt to describe him, but I couldn't.
You couldn't do it. What does he traditionally look like, I wonder, when he's depicted on stage? Do they give him like cloven feet, or do they paint him red, or is he just like a man with little horns on his head or something?
I've seen a few paintings inspired by him. To me, he looks like he's got the semi wolf like face.
Oh yeah, cool. Right.
Anyway,
yeah. Right.
But what your local theatre company does, that's up to them.
Maybe the character arrives on stage and somebody off stage goes, imagine he looks like a wolf. Pretty spooky, right?
Someone just yells out, "Yuck!" Okay. So Caliban's here. He's clearly angry at his master and comes in swearing.
Do you have the swear? I want to know what a Shakespeare swear is like.
He's just cursing and grumbling to himself.
Oh, right.
A bit of muttering, of all.
You nincompoop.
Yeah.
N-word. What?
Oh, my goodness. Well, he's annoyed at Prospero for enslaving him, as Caliban used to live alone on the island, and when Prospero arrived, when the boat just washed up ashore, he showed him around and even pointed out the island's features, like streams and where to get food and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And a rock. Hey, we got a rock here, and there's some sand and...
Starbucks is over there, but the good Starbucks is over there.
Well, Prospero...
Wi-Fi's bad at that Starbucks. That one's good.
Well, Prospero thanked his tour guide by enslaving him with magic.
Oh, come on.
God, I don't know about this Prospero guy.
He taught Caliban to speak, and Caliban jokes that he only knows how to curse and swear because he was taught. He's like, if you didn't want me to answer back, mm-hmm. you shouldn't have taught me
That's
to speak
pretty
English.
Funny. Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's... Is there a Disney movie based on this one, I wonder? The Tempest?
Because
it feels
I've
like
seen.
Caliban is like the... Like the Iago, he's like the little sidekick.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he's a regular-sized man that looks like a wolf, but I'm saying he's like the side guy who's like, what are you doing,
Hey! He's like the comic relief.
Yeah, right?
Everyone likes him until he dies, and then he,
Caliban.
Oh, Caliban, I miss you.
He's just grumbling to himself. Well, Prospero's like, go get some firewood, and he... starts mumbling again. He threatens to use magic on him and give him cramps if he doesn't obey. That's the big threat here. I will cramp you. I'll cramp you hardcore. Oh, that your calf, that's going to cramp up.
That's right. A little wiggle of this finger, you'll get some cramps, buddy.
Oh, oh, oh. Pull me leg. Well, he obeys.
Barn cramp legs are my favourite feature. Ow!
Well, he obeys because he's so scared of getting more cramps.
This is amazing. Mm. Such threats.
No, you sure it wasn't crabs? I'll give you crabs.
Well, that's way worse.
Yeah.
I'll give you craps.
Yes.
Yeah. Give you the crabs. Oh, no. Oh, no. I saw my breeches the last time. I've got to get out of here.
Well, this is the opening. This is Act 1 still. Finally in Act 1, which is a big setup. We're meeting all the characters. Finally in Act 1, Ferdinand, the son of King Alonso, who Ariel made sure was on his own, mm-hmm. meets Prospero and his daughter, Miranda.
Yeah, of course he does.
Miranda
yeah.
wakes up. She's waking up. Yeah. Oh, rubbing a couple of fingers together
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
They're going to – that's a traditional greeting in Naples.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. Instead of shaking hands, they yeah, do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they put their fingers together.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. The E.T., I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Miranda, who has literally never met anyone who isn't her dad or her half-devil slave, falls instantly in love with Prince Ferdinand,
mm-hmm.
first man she's ever seen. Ferdinand is also instantly in love with Miranda.
Because he's a creep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, hello.
You can't escape from this island either.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right. And Prospero watches on. He's secretly stoked about this. He's like, this is part of the plan. That's why I wanted him to be on his own. I got Ariel to separate him from the group. I wanted my daughter to marry this prince. But he doesn't want to make it too easy for these young lovers or let them fall in love too fast.
Okay.
Mm. You know, he doesn't want it to just be a quick little fling and then it burns out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
he wants true love.
Well, he wants his daughter treated with respect.
Mm. And how do you do that? By telling her that this man is a liar and that he's not a prince and that he's going to capture him until he can work out who he really is.
Yeah. Mm. I'm going to give him cramps until he gives up his true identity.
Well, he freezes him with magic and leads him away from Miranda, who's still clearly smitten with the guy. So that is the opening act. How are we feeling?
Wow. I need a wash.
I have a lot of questions.
Please ask them and I'll try to answer them.
First of all, it's clearly some sort of revenge plot.
Mm.
But how did he even... Like, in 12 years, I'm amazed that all the characters from Naples, Milan, etc. haven't just died already. Like, it's that era. Like, they should be dead.
Yeah, I mean, they're all alive. All the ones he was mentioning from earlier. The king, his brother, Gonzalo that helped him out, they're all still alive.
The boatswain, you know?
Beloved boatswain.
He's been caught up in this.
My favourite character so far, who sadly will not return.
Ah!
But he won't...
Just a cameo.
But he won't die either. So...
Good. All right. Okay. So there could be, like, a sequel.
Boatswain Part 2.
I'm getting a little bit of The Secret of Monkey Island vibes, which is a game I played back in the day.
I remember that.
Could have been based on The Tempest, or is it just the island?
There's certainly the island is the biggest element.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
There was some magic.
I remember pirates and...
Yeah, grog.
Well, I assume this place has some sort of pirate cove.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But...
Mm. Right. Now, does... The king's son recognised Prospero. Surely they would have like had something to do with each other in the past.
No. So I imagine that he is of similar age, perhaps, because he hasn't seen Prospero in 12 years.
Mm.
He's falling in love, so maybe he was just a child when Prospero was kicked out of town.
Yeah,
even if he's a couple of years older than Miranda,
right?
But the age isn't said. But yeah, I'm imagining that he's also a teen.
Mm.
Heartthrob, of course.
Of course.
A real Zac Efron type, young Zac Efron.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. Where did Prospero get his magic from? He's just born with it like a mutant, like an X-Men?
Yeah,
maybe it's Maybelline.
Well, never said whether or not he was magic or he just got the magic books and has had so long alone on the island that he's taught himself magic.
Yeah,
isn't it? Because that's all card tricks or whatever. It's just hours of just in a mirror going, okay, all right.
Yeah,
turning the cards.
And he's had so much time to practice that he's just become quite powerful. But perhaps, or it's never said whether or not he had magic beforehand, because if he did, wouldn't he have stopped his brother from kicking him out?
That's my theory. Well, that's probably true, but I sort of imagine him initially as like the court magician kind of thing. You know, like...
Ooh,
that they had traditionally.
What's this behind your ear?
Ooh.
Here,
it's the papers demanding my exile. Oh, no.
Oh. Ooh.
Ooh.
Watch me pull this gourd out of some pantaloons.
Yeah, I don't know. Like all the, like your Merlins and et cetera. Like they're all half a devil, aren't they? They're all, you know. So maybe that's this guy's deal.
But he also does have that beautiful magic sounding name, Prospero.
That's true. Yeah.
That sounds magical.
There is I think there's like a Peter Greenaway movie, like a real like arty movie called Prospero's Books.
Oh, I imagine that would definitely be a reference. Yeah.
It must have something to do with it. Maybe it's the story of how he got his magic.
Yeah, right.
How Prospero got his magic back.
Absolutely, yeah.
Again, that would have been a better title for that film. But we should just come up with better titles for stuff
on
this.
That's what title this sheet. That's what this should be called. Yeah. And it's for very specific high school essays where you just have to come up with better titles for things. The world is crying out for it, you know? As somebody at home listening to this being like, my only task this week was to come up with a better title for this.
But imagine the essay. And in conclusion, that's why I think it should have been called Prejudice and Pride. It just rolls off the tongue.
Mm-hmm. How about Pride and or Prejudice?
Yes. Oh, it makes you think.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, so we're moving into Act Two now. And there are five acts, but I don't want to panic anyone. That is definitely the longest bit because we have to meet all the characters.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm.
But over on another part of the island, we find the other noblemen that have been washed ashore and unbeknownst to them, kept alive by the spirit Ariel.
Mm-hmm.
In this group, we've got King Alonso, mm-hmm. Antonio, mm-hmm. Prospero's brother that stabbed him in the back,
mm.
Gonzalo, the one that gave Prospero food and water and magic books on his raft, so mm. the only one that treated him with kindness,
yep. mm.
and Sebastian, the king's brother.
Do we think that Sebastian is a bit, you know, like the black sheep of the family? Like his name's a bit different, you know?
Well, yeah, he just doesn't sound like they ever thought that he'd be in line for the throne.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, like he's so far down the pecking order. They're like, whatever. But they all think, having said this, that Alonso's son Ferdinand must have drowned because remember he's the one that's been separated from the group that's fallen in love with Miranda.
Well, we can't see him. So he must be dead.
They're all bummed about it. Gonzalo, the one that helped out Prospero, is the only one in the group that shows any positivity or gratefulness for being alive, and the others bag him out because of it. He's the nice guy of the group.
Yep.
He's also gets bullied by the group.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what happens is, you know, in any given social group, the pecking order is determined. And if you're like, well, we're trapped on an island for a bit, let's all make fun of this guy. Because yeah. I don't want to be the guy everybody makes fun of in this island. Let's get him.
You got to strike first.
Mm.
Then Ariel, as I have been saying, our magic spirit enters. And although no one can see him, remember, invisible sea nymph.
Yeah.
They can hear the music he is playing, which sends all but Antonio and Sebastian to sleep.
Oh.
Because there's also some other people in the other noblemen in the group, but I just, for ease of confusion, I haven't named them.
They have assorted noblemen.
And they don't have many lines either.
Mm.
Antonio.
I think there's an edit point there for you, Shakespeare. If they don't have many lines, cut them out.
Cut them out.
Get them. Get rid of them.
He just wanted to give his actor friends jobs.
Ah, yeah, that makes sense, actually, yeah.
You have one line in Act Four and that's it.
Yeah. And he needed some people to be like, well, I'm stuck on this island, but at least I have Sprite. You know? You've got to get the promo.
And it's all right. You've only got a couple of lines, but you still get a festival pass. You can go see all the other shows at the Globe.
Yeah, all the other Shakespeare.
Yeah.
You're part of something. You're part of it. That's right. There are no small parts.
That's true.
Only small ads for Sprite.
And you are right, working on a profit share, aren't you? All right, let's do this.
You're here for the exposure. The next time you do a show, when you do your own show, people will remember you as the guy in the background, you know?
That's right. If you nail that background part.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So everyone's asleep but Antonio and Sebastian. Antonio, the one that screwed his brother Prospero, can't resist a little bit of a scheme. Mm. And he tells Sebastian, the king's brother, that he should kill his brother, the king, and take the throne for himself.
Whoa.
What a fun prank, yeah.
Black sheep. Uh-huh.
Yeah, whilst he's asleep, strike.
Yeah.
God, aren't they wondering why all these other people just, like, fell to sleep around them? Like, did they muse about that in the text, or are they just go, oh, look, they're asleep. Hey, you should kill your brother.
Yeah, I think honestly, it's a bit like, hey, while he's asleep, let's stab him. I'm bored. Got to stab something.
Why don't you stab him? You want to stab him so much, you know?
Yeah. He's like, nah, kill him. Because the king's heir, the son Ferdinand, they think is also dead, who was next in line to the throne, he basically tells Sebastian, if you kill your brother, you're it, mate. Mm. You're the next in line.
Yeah.
Because the heir's out as well.
Mm.
Antonio tells him about taking out his own brother and how much power it gave him and how it was the best thing he's ever done. And Sebastian is convinced, and the two conspirators draw their swords to take out the king as he sleeps.
You know what this is like? This is like Shakespeare's Survivor.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, in a real Survivor vibe from this.
Outwit, outplay.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Who will be the last one hanging onto this piece of jungle equipment? You know, they always have some ridiculous challenge. We're going to stand still for like 14 hours on a stilt or something.
Hell yeah.
Well, that's this bit. They're going to kill someone.
Yeah.
I also love, they're also in the middle of nowhere with no ship. So you kill the king and you go, great, now we have to get home so I can tell everyone that I'm the new king. Like, there's a few steps to go anyway.
But it's all right. We have all this king meat now, so we can survive on that for a while. And we're rescued, I think.
But I'm the king. We ate him. Okay. Well, I guess that makes you the new king.
That's right. I'm full of king.
Yeah.
It's a royale with cheese.
That's what they call it.
I knew this applause would come in handy.
Thank you.
There it is.
Thank you very much. But, of course, meanwhile, back at Naples, they think, you know, the king's dead and all his successors dead. Yeah. Dead. I mean, so they've, like, chosen, you know, Joe Bloggs.
They've already chosen someone else. And in theory, I mean, even if you get home, it could be weeks. So then they've moved on.
Yeah.
Mm. And you turn up and you go, oh, actually, the king's dead. They go, yeah, we know. Oh, no. But not how you think he's dead. I killed him and now I'm king.
They're like, no, we've got this big Birdo over here.
He's... I mean, Chris is the new king. Yeah. All hail Chris. Oh, not Chris.
Chris.
We all hate Chris.
So. Yeah.
So, well, but he was the only one left.
Yeah, there's only 20 people to choose from.
Yeah.
All right.
He's tall for the time. So he's the king now, I guess. He's 5'8". So he's now the king.
So they draw their swords to kill the king. But the spirit, Ariel, the sea nymph, has been watching on, and he whispers into the good man Gonzalo's ear as he sleeps that he should awake to protect the king. And Gonzalo sits up and yells, "Preserve the king!" which wakes everyone up. Mm-hmm. They're like, huh? Antonio and Sebastian explain that they have their swords drawn because they thought they heard something.
Yeah.
Nice. Good, quick thinking, though. I like that. That's good. Yep.
The group seem to accept this, and they continue their search for Prince Sebastian, who they hope is alive. Wrong prince.
Yep. Ferdinand.
Prince Ferdinand, who they hope is still alive.
Nice.
That's the end of that beautiful scene.
I'm lucky I was paying attention to some of that. Yeah. If it had been like, yep, Sebastian, he is. That was a test, I feel. Yeah. That was a test to see for Dave to see if we were still paying attention.
You passed.
Thank you.
You passed a little test.
Thank you.
I quite like that scene. I think that's a good scene. That had a lot of intrigue.
A bit
of danger, a bit of tension.
What happened?
And it shows that, you know, you're only one good meal away from assassinating a king, you know? You know what I mean? You know? Just put everybody in an island, see how fast society breaks down.
Yeah, that's right. Do you really respect the king?
It's a real Lord of the Fries situation, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Well, our next
scene. Late-night vegan food.
Fantastic food. Our next scene is Caliban collecting wood for his master, torments him with spirits that pinch and bite him. So it's not just cramps. Oh. There's also pinches and bites.
Oh, has Prospero sent the pinchy biteys?
He's only threatened him.
Okay, right. So these pinchy biteys are just working on their own.
He's like, I just have to talk to the king pinchy bitey.
Yeah.
I'll descend on you. Well, he then sees a man from the shipwreck wandering the island. This man's name is Trinculo, and he is the king's jester.
Oh, right.
So he's been separated from the rest of the group, wandering around on his own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Caliban mistakes Trinculo for a spirit and hides from the jester by lying on the ground and hiding under his cloak.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. If I can't see you, you can't see me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Trinculo sees Caliban is confused but intrigued by this monster under a cloak and says, "What have we here? Is it a man or a fish?"
He's always on, this guy. You know what I mean?
I got to tell you, this
the best and worst thing about a jester is they're always bloody on. Is this a man or a fish? Who's this guy? Shut up. Shut up, Tranquillo.
You can really imagine him.
Dial it back, mate. We're risking death on an
island.
He's
a real Jim Carrey.
Oh, yeah, right.
10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And this scene is the comic relief scene of the play.
Oh, good.
Very silly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's just trying out new material for the festival.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Is it a man or a fish? Do you like that? Or should I have said, or a man or a pig? I mean, what's funny?
What's a funny animal?
Yeah. Well, let's brainstorm some funny animals. We'll come back together.
And then Caliban's like under the cloak, going, "You suck."
Being heckled by a fish. Trincoolo was then startled by a strike of thunder, and seeing nowhere else to go, he decides a safe place is under the coat with the fish man, so he joins Caliban. So they're both now hiding under a cloak.
Wow. This is a real meet cute situation. Yeah. Oh.
How did you meet your fish man?
Yeah, right.
Then a man named Stefano enters. He is the king's drunken butler.
Oh, every king needs one of them.
You know. He's got a drink in hand and is singing when he comes across the two men under the coat.
Has he always been a drunk? Or has he just started being a drunk on the island?
I think he's always
Was he
a
the
drunk.
Perfect butler until yeah. he hit the island yeah. and he's like, well, time to loosen up. Here we go. Exactly. Bow tie's coming off.
He's been on the wagon for over two decades.
Yeah, right.
He's got nothing to lose, though. Yeah. He landed on the island with a case of rum and was like, all right,
yep,
guess what I'm doing. But he sees what he thinks are four legs sticking out from underneath a coat, and he thinks it's some sort of four-legged monster. Thinking he's seeing things due to a fever, he takes another drink, but this doesn't seem to help. Uh-huh. He only gets drunker.
No way.
He's like, what is going on? Oh, have another drink. Even when the jester calls out to him as someone who knows him because he recognizes Stefano's voice, the drunk butler decides to offer what he sees as a two-headed man, a drink in each mouth. Because he sees two heads. He goes, you need a drink? And he tries to pour a drink into each mouth. Eventually, the jester, Trinculo, comes out from under the coat and Stefano sees him and goes, ah! Oh, I do know you.
It's you from the boat.
They're momentarily distracted, and Caliban grabs the alcohol and starts getting into it. He loves it. He loves the drink so much, he starts to worship Stefano the butler and offers to follow him around as his new master.
Oh.
He is a closet alcoholic.
Yeah. Just imagine he's mumbling and swearing now. It's only gotten worse.
He's like, I don't know who you pixies are, but I sure like your pixie drink. To quote The Simpsons.
Yes, very nice.
Which I've got to get one reference in there. And they walk off together. This trio of crazy drunks.
They're a threeple now.
Yeah, a threeple of crazy drunks.
Okay. I'm glad they found each other.
Yeah.
Initially, I'm like, there's no straight man in this scene. Like, they're all the wacky dude. But I'm like, no, I like them now.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah. I tell you, if I was on that island, I want to be near them because that's where the party's
at. Yeah, they're having exactly the most fun out of everyone on this island.
Totally.
There's no schemes, no murders.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So back over at Prospero's place, the prince who's captured, Ferdinand, is now carrying the wood instead of Caliban.
Mm-hmm.
Being a prince, he's never worked this hard in his life. But unlike Caliban, he doesn't curse, but rather does it with a smile because he knows in a way he's doing it for his love, Miranda.
Oh, God. Miranda, what a good guy. Who said chivalry's dead?
Haven't we all carried some wood for a princess we've just met on an island?
Yes.
That's a metaphor.
Yeah.
Oh, I've literally done that.
Oh, cool. Good for you.
And she rejected me.
Oh, no.
I carried a lot of wood that time.
Mm-hmm.
Miranda comes in to talk to her flame, and Prospero, her father, secretly watches on. He does a lot of secret watching.
He sure does.
He's a bit of a creep.
He is a bit creepy, this guy.
I reckon.
I'm not sure I like him.
It's at this point our prince asks the love of his life what her name is. You know, I love you. Who are you? He's happy to hear it's Miranda because this translates loosely as admiration, something he feels deeply for her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's a smooth talker.
Yeah. Yeah.
He compliments her beauty, which she finds kind of hard to take too seriously because she's only ever seen one woman and it's her own reflection. So he doesn't have anything to compare her own looks to. But it's still nice to be complimented, I think you'd say.
Yeah.
No, Miranda. I've seen heaps of chicks. Yeah. You are. I've seen heaps.
I've been with heaps of chicks.
And you're the best one of the chicks.
You're the best one on this island.
I'm not saying just because you're the only one here. Yeah. Just heaps.
And I'm not saying that because you are literally the only female character in this play.
Mm.
I'm not just saying that.
And not just because your dad's over there watching.
Yeah.
I actually feel this.
Well, she shows that she isn't that shallow because she's not interested when he tells her that he's a prince and possibly now even a king because he thinks his father's dead.
Mm.
He sort of starts to show off a bit about his rank. Mm. She's not interested in that. She's more interested in whether he loves her. And when he says he does, she proposes marriage. Very forward thinking for the time.
Oh, what is it, February 29th?
Yeah.
Is that the day when you can do that? Very convenient.
But Ferdinand says yes, and then they leave.
Oh.
So we'll be over here, Dad.
Prospero, watching on, is happy. Bit of a soliloquy going on here, talking to himself.
Mm-hmm.
He thought this would happen. He then grabs his magic book because his plans are not yet fulfilled.
Because we still don't know. Is this a scheme, or does he just want to get a husband for his daughter?
We're not sure. I love a Shakespearean moment, a bit of soliloquy to end a scene.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, where's this going?
Yes.
And then they walk off.
And that's how he ends all his soliloquies, the character going, but where's this going? Hey, the audience?
Knowing wink to the audience.
What do you reckon?
Meanwhile, back to our trio of drunken weirdos, Caliban, Trinculo, and Stefano, who are continuing to drink.
Here we go. Now things are getting
interesting. I think we need to give them a threeple name. What are their names again?
Caliban, Trinculo, and Stefano.
Caltra Steph. No, it doesn't work. Yeah. No.
Maybe we can use the Arno part of Stefano. So Calatriano.
Caltrofano.
All right, well, Caltrofano.
Wait, yes.
The new boy band of the island. They're together. Mm-hmm. Together at last.
Yeah.
Stefano, the drunken butler with the liquor, has decided because he's in charge of the liquor, he's in charge of the island.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They love the alcohol.
It is very modern.
Yeah.
Very modern. Yeah. You know, that's what happens these days.
That's right. Every bar manager...
They're in charge.
They're the king of the island,
Got the keys to the liquor cabinet, the keys to my heart.
Mm.
Ariel, our spirit from earlier, enters. Or Ariel. I don't know which one to go with here. Ariel, Ariel, what are we thinking?
Caltrofano. We're changing all their names to Caltrofano for ease of use.
For ease. That's not confusing for anyone out there, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Caltrofano talks to Caltrofano.
Yes.
So, Ariel, I'm going to go with that for now. But anyway, you know who I'm talking about, the spirit from earlier. He enters invisibly and starts playing tricks on our three drunks.
Is Ariel still a nymph?
Yeah, still a nymph at this stage.
There's no way of knowing invisible.
But they don't know, so there's no point.
Yeah.
So they're pretty easy to play tricks on because they're all drunk out of their minds and also pretty crazy people anyway.
Is he doing this just because he's bored, Ariel? Is he just playing tricks? Or do these tricks have a purpose?
He's under orders. He's got a cramp. He's got, my master wants something.
I better trick him.
What do you want? Let my hamstring go. Well, he starts saying things that they assume one of the others has said. So he starts whispering.
Yeah.
And then, what did you say, Caliban?
Oh, yeah.
And eventually Stefano punches Trinculo, the jester, because he thought he said something offensive.
Yep.
Caliban starts to plot revenge against his master, Prospero, without knowing that Ariel is listening in and spying on them. Caliban tells them that they should steal Prospero's magic books, as they are the source of his power. Then what they should do is kill him and then make Stefano king of the island. Remember, he's got the liquor. And then force Prospero's daughter, Miranda, to be his wife and queen of the island.
That's not cool. This seems like a very cool plan
up until the next day when they've run out of booze and they've all sobered up a little bit and they're quite hungover and they're like, oh no, we killed everybody and we burned all the magic books and we forced marriage.
Oh no. Now it's literally a king and a queen and two other people.
Right.
The king and queen of nothing.
Uh-huh.
Ariel starts playing music and Caliban tells the others, they're like, what's that music? Which frequently happens throughout the play. So Ariel, to be honest, is a bit annoying.
Mm.
Playing these little songs throughout the play, strumming a harp, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And Caliban tells the others who are like, what the hell is that music? He's like, be not afeard. The isle is full of noises, sound and sweet airs. And Stefano says, this will prove a brave kingdom to me where I shall have my music for nothing. End quote.
Free music. You say that now, but I mean... 6 months down the line.
Yeah, well, it's only a 30-day trial and then
exactly.
And then it's just back
to
ads.
Exactly, that's right.
Yeah. Then you've either got to pay that subscription fee.
Bring. You've been listening to Ariel, the spirit of the island. Want more? Sign up to Ariel Premium.
Damn it. Then for some reason, they decide to follow the music and then they'll act out their plot.
Oh, yeah, cool.
So they've got a plan, but they go, this music's pretty sweet. Let's follow that for a bit and then we'll go kill and get the magic books.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They leave.
Mm-hmm.
End of scene. Then our final scene for this third act. Alonso, Sebastian, Antonio, Gonzalo are still searching for the king's son, Ferdinand, but they've wandered around the island so much that they need to stop and rest. Antonio, Prospero's evil brother, encourages Sebastian, the king's brother, and tells him that with the king exhausted, later that night they should be able to exact their plan and kill him. So he hasn't given up on that plan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
To become king of nothing.
There's a lot of plans going on.
There's a lot of plans. A lot of schemes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is probably the strangest scene in the play in terms of magic and the like.
Oh, I'm ready.
And I love to imagine what they did back in Shakespeare's day with no real set and very basic music and sound effects, because this is one of the stage instructions. Enter several strange shapes, bringing in a banquet, and dance about it with gentle actions of salutations and inviting the king, etc., to eat. So just imagine several strange shapes wandering the stage.
And who's his character, etc.? Have we met them before?
That's one of the people I glossed over earlier.
Right, okay.
Because I thought they didn't have any lines, but they are mentioned.
Yeah.
They are compelled to eat the banquet.
So it's a magic banquet.
It's a magic. Well, just before the men eat at the magic banquet, they all go, should we eat? And Gonzalo, the nice, rational one, goes, well, to be honest, I thought he was rational until he says, hey, I've heard stories about stuff that's even weirder than this, so let's just go with it. And they go, okay. They're about to eat. And then another stage instruction. Enter Ariel like a harpy, his wings upon the table. A harpy is a monster that has a woman's head and body and then bird's wings. So just imagine all of this happening in Shakespeare's day with very little effect.
Mm.
The men see the harpy and all draw their swords, but they can't seem to lift them now as the harpy has made them heavy with magic. Bit of a comical scene there. Can't even lift up their swords off the ground.
Very funny. It's a metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah, try getting that up. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Ariel goes on to accuse Alonso, Sebastian, and Antonio of stealing his master Prospero's job and sending him and Miranda into exile, driving them onto a dangerous boat. He tells them that as punishment, that the storm and the sea took King Alonso's son Ferdinand and drowned him. They're like, oh no, confirmed, he is dead.
One of us will have to be the king now, oh no.
Then Ariel leaves, and then the shapes enter again, this time to remove the banquet and the table, so they didn't even get to eat. So the banquet was brought in front of them, they're freaked out, then before they eat, the banquet is taken off.
Clever ruse, wow.
And then et cetera goes hungry again.
And they were really hungry too. Prospero has been watching on invisible to the others, of course he has.
Mm-hmm.
He's happy with his plan as everyone is now under his control. End of the third act. Probably have a bit of a curtain fall here.
Okay, right.
Everyone goes out and has an interval to think about what's happened. Any predictions for the final two acts? There's only two, which are one scene each.
Well, you've said comedy, so probably not a bloodbath, but I wouldn't rule out a couple of deaths, I don't think.
Someone's got to go down. And I feel like, you know, Shakespeare was, or was he? Actually, I don't know. Is he big on, like, you know, the characters getting their comeuppance? Because Prospero needs to get his comeuppance, I think. Like,
yes, definitely in the tragedies, I think people get their bit of a comeuppance.
Right. So maybe Prospero just learns a lesson then.
A funny lesson or a romantic lesson.
No.
Which one will it be?
Maybe he finally discovers that all he really wanted was the island and Ariel, his spirit, and then they can just get together at the end. That would be cool.
Him and his beloved sea nymph.
Yes. Yeah,
his invisible sea nymph. Yeah. That's great.
And everyone thinks he's insane because no one else can see him. Got his arm around the sea nymph.
Yeah.
He's literally making out with the air.
Yeah, do we think that Ferdinand and Miranda have a future? Like, is this something we're going to get behind?
Do you think this is long term?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
But yeah, I've been wrong before.
You did say it was like a romantic comedy. Did you say a romantic comedy?
Yeah.
In the stylings of Neil Marshall films from the 80s?
Absolutely.
Yeah, all right. Very good. All
right. Well, actually, to answer your question, Act 4, Scene 1, our only scene of Act 4, Prospero agrees to the proposal of marriage between his daughter Miranda and Ferdinand, who had previously enslaved and accused of being a liar.
Now, like, just for the timeline, this is still the same day that they've met, isn't it? Is this?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's all happening
pretty quick.
Mm. It is pretty quick.
But when you know, you know. You know.
Is that true?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, but it is a big day. You've been washed up on shore. Mm. You've met a woman. You've fallen in love instantly. The dad said you're a liar and enslaved you. Then the woman said, "Hey, would you like to marry?" You've said yes, and now the dad's like, "Hey, actually, I'm cool with you, son. You're my son."
It's like the movie Speed, you know?
Yes.
Romance in difficult situations.
Exactly. It brings people together. But can Annie and Keanu stay together in the long run? without the pressure of the bus?
Based on speed too? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah, yep, that's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
It was Jason Patrick, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was Jason Patrick, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The next one.
Yeah. The poor man's
I'm assuming they're, yes, they're still together.
Yeah,
they exactly are? Yeah, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to think so.
She's waiting, yeah, she's waiting for that third stressful situation before she meets another man.
Yeah, right.
Well, so they're all cool now. Prospero's like, yeah, you can marry my daughter. To celebrate, Prospero uses Ariel's magic to perform a mask, which dictionary.com tells me is a form of amateur dramatic entertainment, popular among the nobility in the 16th and 17th centuries.
Is that M-A-S-Q-U-E?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
A masque.
Yeah, masque.
Oh. Pardon me, yeah, if I've been saying that wrong all these years.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Haven't been to Naples. Like you. I imagine you're an Italian expert.
Hey, where are the masques in this place?
Masque. Hey. Well, three spirits appear for the celebration, each of them a representation of a god, which is a cool thing to do. It does make me wonder, if you can do all this stuff, why are you still trapped on the island? But anyway.
It's a good question, isn't it?
Everything's going really well with the masque. Everyone's having a good time until Prospero startles suddenly and the gods vanish. He says to himself, quote, I had forgotten that foul conspiracy of the beast Caliban and his confederates against my life. That minute of their plot is almost gone, end quote. So he'd forgotten that the trio of weirdos were coming to kill him because Ariel said, hey, I heard they're coming to kill
you. Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
And now he has to suddenly cancel the lover's party to take care of that because he's partying, yeah, remembers, everything stops. His new son-in-law's like...
Record scratch.
His new son-in-law's like, this is a bit strange. I haven't seen this side of your dad before. And then he says, don't worry, it's just my old age.
Right. So he's just a cut and sick, is he?
Yeah. It's like, oh, God, whoa, sorry about this. Cancel the party. I've got to go deal with some people that are plotting to kill me. Right. So he calls on Ariel to give him a report on the three men who we last saw following Ariel's music.
Remember? Status update. Mm.
Ariel reveals that using music, he led them through some prickle bushes and then into a filthy lake. He's playing a prank on them, guys.
Yeah.
He punked them real good. Uh-huh.
I lured them through some tar and then some feathers. Yeah. Look at them now. They look like chickens.
I'll tell you what, but being on this island, you could get cramps. You could get little like bites. Yep. You could get led into a dirty lake.
I mean, it's torturous. It's,
what, yeah.
You better do what he says.
Yeah.
He might pinch you. Right. Prospero was happy to hear it. He's happy to hear about the pranks. Mm. And he gets into position to trap the trio. Mm. The three men enter wet from the lake and they are distracted by nice clothing that they see hanging up and they want to steal it. They are startled by spirits that enter in the shape of dogs and hounds hunting them. Another little prank.
Did they get the clothes or not?
They grab the clothes and then the dogs enter.
Okay, right.
Again, I'd love to imagine back in the day what Shakespeare's... Because obviously when I'm reading this and when I'm telling you, it's the shape of dogs and hounds. Mm. So that's, I've got an imagination of what, you know, I can imagine what that is.
Yeah. Oh, I was imagining what the nice clothes were. Okay. I was thinking matching Adidas running suits. Yeah.
Well,
like the Beastie Boys.
I think it would be great if this was more of a hip-hop musical.
Yeah, right.
Agree?
Mm. Nice.
I think it'd sound a little something like this. I won't. I never would.
But imagine watching it back in Shakespeare's day in the 16th, 17th century, and you're watching it.
I think they just let loose some stray dogs.
Yeah. Yes. Are they stray dogs? And are you thinking, where do these dogs come from? Or are you like, oh, this must be some sort of magic thing.
Dogs, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd have a lot of questions seeing it live, I imagine.
Mm.
But anyway.
I think people back in the day were just like, they were just happy for the spectacle.
Yeah.
So whatever it was, whether it be loose stray dogs, they've just opened the stage door and they've just let the dogs on, or if they've dressed up some rando background actors as dogs, or just a piece of paper with dogs written on it.
Yeah.
You know, they're whatever it is, happy. They're like, they've done it again.
Well, look,
he's done it again.
As long as they didn't die that day, then they were happy.
And
then,
exactly right.
And everything that happened was a plus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the consumption didn't get me today.
Yeah.
And there's some dogs or something on stage.
That's
maybe somebody just goes, imagine dogs. There's heaps of them. They're running wild.
They just start. How does he do it?
How does he do it?
I'm imagining dogs right now. How does he get them in my mind?
Yeah.
Well, Act 5 is our final act and brings our separate stories from around the island together.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Ariel tells Prospero, who is now dressed in his magic robes, that the king and his group of men are imprisoned by magic.
Hang on. He's got magic robes. He's got magic books and magic robes.
Magic robes and also a staff.
Oh, is the staff magic? Or is it just a star? Is it
just a stick? He thinks it gives him magic powers.
Right, okay.
But who's to say?
Yeah.
The magic was within him all along. He didn't need the stuff, you know?
Well, he's dressed in all this magic stuff, and Ariel tells him that the king and his group of men are imprisoned by magic somewhere on the island. He tells Ariel to release them and bring them before him so he can address his enemies once and for all.
Mm-hmm.
Now alone on stage, Prospero draws a circle around himself with his staff and delivers a soliloquy. He talks of all the magic he's done in his life, even opening graves and awaking sleeping corpses, so he can bring people back to life.
He's the Night King.
He's a very, very magic man. He pledges to give up magic after one last trick before he will smash and bury his magic staff and throw his magic books deep into the ocean.
He's turning his back on a life of magic.
But why?
Well,
that's this last trick.
That is a bit of a famous soliloquy.
Okay.
It's quite long, and he's going through all the magic he's done, and he says, but I...
And my last trick is this your card? No.
Oh,
but I pledged. I pledged, didn't I? I still got to...
I snapped the staff too early. He's trying to sticky tape it back together. Ooh. But was I close? Was it the right suit? Ariel then...
That's just the card with the instructions on it.
Oh, God. Ariel then returns with the king and his other men, including his backstabbing brother Antonio, who stand around Prospero, charmed by Ariel's spells. Prospero thanks Gonzalo at first for helping him escape all those years earlier and says, you are my only true friend.
You're a good bloke.
Then he has a crack at all the others for their backstabbing.
This is like the airing of grievances.
Yeah.
Yes. A bit like, and you.
Yeah.
And this is what I hate most about you. Yeah.
And you, 10 years ago, when I came over to your house, you didn't offer me a beer. I remember.
I've been thinking about it for 10 years.
I loaned you my lawnmower and you never brought it back. Yeah. I had to buy another lawnmower.
That's right. And then you borrowed that one and you returned that and had a ding in it.
So he's doing that. Then there's a bit of a power move. He puts on his old Duke of Milan robes.
Remember,
he was he was forced out as the Duke of Milan. He puts them on and goes, huh?
What's over the top of his magic robes?
Yeah.
Right.
Double robe.
Well, I hope he doesn't get too hot.
Yeah. Especially with all the anger. You're yelling at people.
Yeah.
I imagine you're getting pretty hot.
I'm taking my Milan robes off again because I'm a bit warm. Just imagine, though, that I've still got them on because I'm making a point.
Ariel, quick, make the robes hang in front of me and make me look like I'm wearing them. He then promises to free his spirit helper, Ariel. Something at the start of the play he never would have even thought of doing. Prospero then snaps the man out of their spell so he can properly talk to them. It's just so funny. Until that point, have they been taking on anything you're saying? He's just been yelling at people that are frozen, and you, and you, and you, and they're just giving him blank. He decides to forgive his brother Antonio, but demands that he give up being a duke and make him the Duke of Milan again. Antonio does not respond. I mean, are we assuming he's saying yes? Anyway, he doesn't respond. King Alonso says he is sorry for screwing over Prospero years earlier, but is glad that they can make up. He tells him
he's at the mercy of the wizard, who can seemingly do anything, so... this is definitely a genuine apology, I reckon.
I apologize to the man who was in charge of me. So Prospero has forgiven him. The king says he's sad that his son has drowned, and Prospero tells the king that he too can relate because he also once lost a daughter, Miranda. Alonso responds that he wishes that both of their children were alive and that they could get married and rule as king and queen of Naples. And then Prospero goes, well, actually, it's funny you should say that because they are both alive and in love, and then literally opens a curtain, revealing behind it the prince and Miranda, who are playing a game of chess.
Such
a sexy game.
Yeah. Luckily, Alonso was happy about this rather than being like, oh, I was just saying that to be nice. That's awkward.
And also, I definitely thought my son was dead. You've tricked me here. You thought, you knew your daughter was alive and you said lies.
I literally thought my child was dead, but they're not. And then Miranda sees the group standing there and delivers one of the most famous lines of the play. She says, oh, wonder, how many goodly creatures are here there? How beauteous mankind is. Oh, brave new world that hath such people in it. And that is where the Huxley novel gets the title Brave New World from.
Oh,
that line from The Tempest.
Was going to be called People In It.
It's actually People Int.
All right.
I-N apostrophe
People
T.
Int question mark?
So that Brave New World. So she's stoked that everyone's coming together. Alonzo apologizes again for screwing over Miranda and her father, but Prospero says, I've already forgiven you. Stop apologizing. In fact, I'm annoyed now that you've apologized. No, he doesn't go that far. Alonzo is a bit confused, and also Shakespeare shuts everyone down who might be wondering what the hell is going on in this scene. He says, Alonzo, this is a strange, a maze as air men trod, and there is in this business more than nature was ever conduct of. Some oracle must rectify our knowledge, which translates as, this is stranger business than man have ever set foot in before, and it's not natural either. We need some sort of oracle to tell us what's going on.
Right.
Basically,
I've written this kind of poorly, me, William Shakespeare, and I need somebody to show up and explain all the nonsense.
Speaking for the crowd there. And Prospero says, sir, my liege, do not infest your mind with beating on the strangeness of this business. Picked leisure, which shall be shortly single, I'll resolve you, which to you shall seem probable of every these happened accidents. Till then, be wonderful. Translation, sir, my king, don't waste your time mulling over how strange this business is. When the time is right, and it'll be soon, I promise I alone will explain everything that's happened. Until then, just be cheerful and keep an open mind. So if you're not digging the play, shut the hell up. It's nearly over.
We will explain nothing. Yeah. If there's any loose ends, don't worry about it. No refunds.
Yeah.
I already have your money.
Basically, if you think this is all a bit magical and crazy, who cares? Then Ariel brings in Caliban, Stefano, and Trinculo wearing their stolen clothes. Our drunken, what are they called again?
I've forgotten.
Calistefano?
No.
Calitrafano.
Calitrafano.
They're back wearing the stolen clothes. Prospero has every right to be pissed off at them because they plotted to kill him. He makes them return their clothes and then clean his quarters for a party that night, where he invites King Alonso and all his men and promises to regale them with how he survived all these 12 years. And they're all like, great. Can't wait to hear about it. He then also forgives Caliban. He says, I know you were plotting to kill me, but I forgive you. And Caliban says, I'm really sorry. I was quite drunk.
And we all done stuff while we're drunk?
You know? Yeah, yes. And you enslaved me for 12 years.
So, yeah, exactly. You know. So, I mean,
so it's kind of the combination of the two.
Put it together. Yeah. And he's like, all right, I forgive you. In the morning, they plan to sail back to Naples together, and his daughter Miranda can marry Prince Ferdinand. Then Prospero says he plans to retire to Milan, where he thinks he will soon die of old age anyway. Prospero asks Ariel to grant him one more thing, and that is calm seas so they can travel home safely. And after that, he sets his spirit free.
Huh. If I were Ariel, I'd probably be like, calm seas for a man who enslaved me for years? Yep. Now I get in the boat and see you never.
Little practical Boom! Joke.
The bloody biggest tempest, an even bigger one.
Yeah.
Bam. You're dead.
That could be the sequel.
You dogs. It's called Bam, You're Dead, You Dogs.
Great title.
Thank you. Thank you.
So that's the final scene, but we have an epilogue.
Oh, look out.
Prospero.
After the credits.
Yeah exactly. Yeah. So some people have walked out already.
And
don't get this.
You got character comes on with an eye patch.
Yeah. Well, people learned after a few Shakespeare plays, they're like, stay till after the end. Don't go anywhere. No, stay.
Well, Prospero remains alone on stage to deliver an epilogue directly to the audience. He requests that the audience set him free. Now that he's thrown away his magic and forgiven all of his enemies, he needs the audience to release him from the island that has imprisoned him for the last 12 years. Only the audience's applause can signal that he is free to leave. His final lines are, as you from crimes would pardon be, let your indulgence set me free. Basically, just as you'd like to have your sins forgiven, indulge me, forgive me, and set me free. Everyone in this world wants to have their sins forgiven. I've forgiven my enemies. Now you forgive me. and rumour has it that he's still standing there as no one applauded. No, the audience hopefully applauds and he bows and can leave. And that's
interesting.
So crafty, Shakespeare. That's, he's like, we've got to ensure that we get an applause because I'm not sure about this. This is a bit crazy, this play.
I don't know if people like it. It's been a couple of hours. Have you followed what's going on? But if I beg for an applause, I'll probably get one.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't like audience interaction. Like people in the crowd are like, nope.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not in. Yeah. Nope.
You know, when you see like a band or something like that, maybe the opening act is a band you don't recognize or something, and they're like, come on, guys, get into it kind of thing. You know? And people are like, nope. I'd rather not, actually.
This is a little digression here, but
what is a podcast if not a series of digressions, you know?
I saw Public Enemy, like it was either Meredith or Golden Plains. And if you've ever been to those festivals, like they're pretty laid back. There's a bit of hippie nonsense going on. Uh-huh. But anyway, so Public Enemy come out and they go, everyone, we want you all to pull out your phones and go to this website and to like the band.
No.
everyone's just standing there going, nah, man.
Ah, we turned our phones off. Oh, yeah.
That is.
Yeah. But I would be very curious to see, because also, I would, if I were in the audience, like modern day, and he said what he said there, I think I'd mostly just be confused. Yep. I think be like, do you want applause or not? Like, I think nowadays they'd have to put an instruction in the program guide that says everyone must applaud so he can leave, because otherwise he's just going to stand there.
I think at the end the stage manager is starting the applause.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Hoping that people join in. Everyone, and then the actor can go, oh, thank God.
Mm.
Oh, thank God.
I can't leave until I chug this beer. Chug, chug.
But that is the end of the play. That's how it finishes. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it promised a lot and didn't really deliver.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of loose ends, to be honest with you. I think there were a lot of... I kind of would have preferred if it did end in a bloodbath.
Yeah.
Yeah, he basically just, like, a switch was flicked and he went, actually, I'm going to forgive everyone.
Were you saying that this one was one he wrote without a collaborator?
Yeah, so he did not have anyone.
Wow. Well, speaking of, I was going to say, the Caliban in the movie Logan... The character Caliban is played by Stephen Merchant. And I feel like this feels like a bit of a Ricky Gervais script without a Stephen Merchant.
Okay.
Because a lot of that's like his best work, I think, is Gervais and Merchant together with a collaborator.
I think he needs someone else to rein that scene in, add this in.
I think maybe he needs a bit of a human, like he needs a guy to be like, but how would the characters actually react in this situation? I feel like maybe he does. Maybe his best work is with a collaborator, because this kind of just like fizzled a bit. And it did fizzle. There were a lot of murder plots happening and everybody went, no, I'm cool actually now.
Yeah, like literally no one died.
Yeah.
At the end, that's why I think it's classified as a comedy originally, because all of Shakespeare's comedies have like a happy ending and this essentially does have that. So I think they went, all right, this isn't a tragedy. It's not based on history. Mm. No one died. Let's just call it a comedy.
I think it needs maybe some cards at the end where it's like, Cal Trufano bought a pub together and they live above it and they're happy forever.
We need to know.
Yeah. Fernando and Miranda, they got married and then they finished high school, you know?
Yeah.
And the boatswain, he's just been the boatswain.
Yeah, just a wink to the camera. But people, scholars... have been reading about whether that was really Prospero at the end of the play addressing the audience or Shakespeare himself.
Oh, okay.
It was towards the end of his writing career, sort of drawing a close on things, asking the audience to set him free.
Please love me.
Yeah, please applaud. Yeah. Let me go.
Because he didn't want to do any more plays? Is that...
Well, because I think he only wrote one or two after this and they were in collaboration and history plays. So not sure if...
Mm.
Right, so
maybe his last couple
were just like recounting real events. They weren't really.
Yes, but as, I mean, even the ones that are history plays, he does sort of bend.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
bend history to a lot of the time. Like Richard III is now seen as a very, very evil character because in the play he's got this crooked hunchback and is basically.
And he said it during World War II.
Yeah, you know? Super evil.
Hmm.
It's hard. They're not exactly that historical, but based on some. History.
I get it.
Yeah, but this isn't. So that's why they went, this is a comedy play. And now people have said, look, there's not much comedy in it, but there's a bit of romance and it ends romantically with them getting together. So is this a romance play? So what do you think? Romance or comedy? What's it? Or both?
I think it was... Look, I think I'm going to go with more comedy just because there were more comedy scenes.
Yeah.
Like the romance is pretty much like, oh, I've just met you and we're in love. Like there's no romance there. Yeah, I met you in love, let's play chess.
Yeah.
You know, it's more, if you said this was a romance at the start, I'd be like, well, where'd the romance?
Yeah, well, it's about as romantic as Tinder, really.
But at least, exactly.
There's no like chase, I like chess. Showing up.
Yeah.
There's no actual wooing.
I'm looking for a checkmate over here. No, I'd say it's a comedy because at least we've got the trio of drunks.
Mm.
And we've got some people getting cramps. That's funny.
That's pretty funny. I mean, even because it doesn't result in actual murder, those murder plots could be a bit funny.
That's true.
Hey,
yeah.
Hey, he's asleep. Stab him in the throat. Go on, do it.
Yeah. Oh, no, we just heard a noise. Yep, that's what happened there. We're rehearsing for a play where we murder each other.
Well, what do you think, Dave? What's your review? How many stars did you give it?
Well, yeah, actually, at the end of the text, I always get both you guys and myself to rate it out of 5.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
So, right.
Any thoughts, Sam? What?
Oh, well,
I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but from what you heard there, I'm not feeling you loved it.
No.
I'm rating your retelling a 4 because I liked it. 4
totally.
Out of 5.
Yep,
but I think the story
that.
Itself, maybe a 2 out of 5.
Yeah, I'll go 2.5. All right, a little bit more generous. So can I do halves? I can do
absolutely.
Halves.
Right, you can, whatever percentage you want.
All right, well, 2.697.
2.697, just to make sure I'm getting that right.
Very good.
2.697 out of 5.
Yep.
Fantastic. I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Okay, all right.
Because there were some interesting bits. I was a little disappointed by the end. Maybe it's because we have done tragedies previously with Othello and Hamlet, and they have these fantastic ends where there's a lot of bloodshed.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very exciting. But this one was a bit like, forgive you, snap my staff, throw it in the water. Okay.
And also, I think, as you mentioned earlier, this is like one of those, it's like one of your superhero movies where at the end you're like, but why didn't they just do this? Why didn't they just whatever? Like, it's one of those ones where it's like, well, if he's got all the magic, why can he just leave the island?
Just leave.
Would he just, you know, or turn it into a paradise where he doesn't have to leave, you know? What's this guy's deal?
I do think that reading it, maybe the story at the end is a bit dull there, but I feel like if you saw like a high budget production of it, it could look really spectacular.
That's true.
You've got the Tempest, you've got all these spirits and things going on.
Mm.
Yeah.
But again, seeing it back in Shakespeare's day, I do wonder how they were able to, imply storms and stuff. Obviously, you can do that with sound and stuff, but like, and people being invisible throughout the whole time, because a lot of the time you have to remind the audience that they can see Prospero, but no one else can.
Yeah, for sure. Mm.
I'd be interested to see how they do that. And I did promise words and phrases introduced in The Tempest. I've got a list here of a couple of things that were either introduced for the first time or very much popularized by.
Mm.
So that phrase "Brave New World" I was talking about before, a sea change.
Like the ABC drama Sea Change.
Sea Change. That's
right. That's a dramedy. That's a comedy. Yeah, that's a comedy. Right. That's a romantic comedy, isn't it?
That's got a few things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the concept,
the character Diver Dan was invented by Shakespeare.
Diver Dan. Man, if you are from overseas and don't know Sea Change, it was so big here.
It was.
It was very popular.
Massive. It was a real sea change for Australian TV, I think.
It was, and I imagine sea change. That's
so sea change is when you change your whole, life. You pull up stumps and you bloody go somewhere else.
Or a tree change. People has been popularized as well when you move to the country or the mountains or something for a new life. The phrase fair play and foul play.
Right. What's said together? Is that a thing? Oh, fair play and foul play, mate.
No, separate. Said separately. I think it's a bit of a.
But hey, we can invent that if we want.
Yeah. No.
Hey, fair play and foul play, mate.
Yeah, come on.
Who's to say we can't invent our own phrases? If Shakespeare can do it, I think the new Shakespeare podcasting can also invent its own phrases.
Well, I think the opening line of Macbeth is "fair is foul and foul is fair."
Yeah.
So,
well, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah. But he was just talking about a chicken.
Yeah. This chicken is rank. Cajun chicken? Yeah, I know a good recipe.
Mm-hmm.
The phrase "vanish into thin air."
Oh yeah,
someone to disappear like that. And probably my favorite,
the phrase "invisible harpy."
Super sexy sea nymph. Mm-hmm. No, the phrase "in a pickle."
Oh.
Someone to be in a pickle.
Well, when did they say that?
Which I looked into. So pickles were used to make relish at the time. That was the most common, rather than eat a pickle. So it meant that someone was caught up in the mix of making a pickle. So either being stewed, smashed together, or served on a platter.
Yeah,
so you're caught up in that process. So someone says, in a pickle,
But who said it in The Tempest? Where did that come from?
can't remember who said in a pickle.
I like it.
Let's
I like
assume.
It. I like in a pickle.
You don't have to go back, Dave. Let's just assume that everybody says it at the end of every scene. Like at the at every scene switch, somebody goes, "Man, we're really in a pickle now. We're still in a pickle. We're still in the pickle." And at the end, Prospero's like, "We're not in a pickle anymore."
Yeah. Brilliant.
And we can leave.
Scene.
Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah, it's like in Star Wars, where someone always has to say, "I have a bad feeling about this," but they just say it in every scene.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm looking up the context here. In the Tempest, so it's Alonso asking, who's the king, asking his jester Trinculo, "How camest thou in this pickle?" And then Trinculo, who's one of the drunken trio, he says, "I have been in such a pickle since I saw you last."
Okay,
So it's towards the end of the play when everyone's back together.
Is that, I wonder also the origin of if somebody's pickled. Like they're drunk. They're bloody pickled, mate.
Very nice.
Let's credit
Shakespeare. Let's give it to him. Let's give him another phrase, why don't we? Yeah, cool. Yeah, cool.
Just give it to him. Yeah. Well, that brings us basically to the end of the show, but there's one final bit that I do at the end of the show, and that is people support this show on Patreon. Mm. They support this show as well as my other podcast I do with Matt and Jess, Do Go On, and also Matt's other podcast, Primates. It's all in one spot there if people do want to keep those shows going. So basically this and Primates were a spin-off from Do Go On. And if you want to support
When's Jess going to do a spin-off? What's her spin-off?
We're waiting for it. Well, the one that people want Jess to do is Phrasing the Bar.
For the Frasier podcast, yeah.
Which is a... Well, no, it's a Brendan Fraser.
Oh, that is
Brendan
Fraser. Okay, right. I should have said Frasiering the Bar.
Yeah, Brendan Fraser. So on one of the episodes of Primates where Jess was on with Matt, they talked about how they should do a podcast called Phrasing the Bar where they review every Brendan Fraser film in order.
Yeah.
And that was over a year ago and people are still like, when's it coming out? When's it coming out?
Oh, wow.
When's this joke thing you said coming out? Where is it?
People are very, very
keen
on
Doom Patrol now. Where's the Brendan Fraser? When's he coming back?
I know. Yeah. I can't tell you when it's coming, but if you do want that, take that up with Jess.
Yeah, add her on Twitter. She'll love it.
But one thing I do on Patreon, if people support the show here, is I actually announce what the next book is going to be in advance, because even though the point of the show when it started was that people didn't have to read the book, a lot of people got in contact saying, "Hey, I'd love to read it in advance and then hear you talk about it so I can understand it even more."
Yeah.
So as a reward on there, I actually announce the next week's book in advance if people do want to do that. So that's one of the rewards. And I also shout out to some people who have told me their favourite book. And then we get to judge their choices.
I like judging people.
Sam, this is why I'm here. The rest of it I can take a leave. Yeah, to be like, nice one, idiot.
Yeah, to sit in judgment of strangers. Yeah. This is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. All right. So first of all, thank you to Stephen Miller for supporting the show, who told me Stephen's favourite book is The Subtle Knife. The first book I read as a kid that I really related to a character. The whole Dark Materials series is still shit hot. But this book is definitely my favourite.
Okay.
All right. Steve, I haven't read that, but my partner has and she does like that series, so you're all right with
you give that. That a tick?
I give that a tick. That's all right.
You heard it here, Stephen. You get a tick. But thanks for supporting the show.
You've escaped this time.
Yeah.
You've escaped the island of our judgment.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, Liam Maroney is up next. Thank you so much, Liam Maroney, who says his favourite book is 1984. I try and read it once a year. Scary how real some of its elements are becoming.
Yeah, I like 1984 as well, but at this point it's kind of quaint. a lot of it is kind of quaint because it's like, you know, oh, yesterday's news, we're changing yesterday's news, and now... You can see people being interviewed and they're changing the news as it's coming in
live. In real time.
Yeah, you can see a thing happening and then a commentator going, "That's not happening. Nope, not happening right now.
Yep.
Look away."
So thank you, Liam. 1984 is one of my most commonly requested books, actually, so I'm sure I will get to it someday soon.
It's a good read.
Thank you, Liam. Mm-hmm. And finally, Zach Llewellyn. Zach Llewellyn, who told me his favourite book is The Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick.
Mm.
Familiar with this at all?
Yeah, no. that's a novel set in an alternate universe in which the Germans won World War II.
Oh, right.
That's a TV series now.
Yeah.
So. Oh, fantastic.
And that's what it's about.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds quite interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a Dick book.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Zach Llewellyn.
Well, I'm going to give that a tick because I do like Dick books.
Philip K. Dick.
Yes. Very nice.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone that does support the show, though. It does make a difference to me, and I really do appreciate it. You can go out and buy all these books and things to talk about. And, get on there at patreon.com/dogoonpod if you are so inclined. But, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me. That brings us to the end of the episode.
What a pleasure.
All about Thank the Tempest.
You. It's been great.
Appreciate that. And so this is the third Shakespeare. So the first author I've done multiple ones of, obviously one of the most influential writers in the English language. And I hope to get through more in the future. So if anyone out there would like to suggest a Shakespeare or anything out there, you can click on that little link in the description and tell me why I should do it, and I'll shout out to you.
Are there any non-Shakespeare authors that you are going to come back to?
Come back to, yes.
There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of classics where the author's just done one. They're one and done.
Mm. Yeah, one and done. And a Great Gatsby type situation.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. No offense to Tender as the Night. But anyway. But that's it. That's the most famous one, for example. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Or last week, I should sort of say, I did The Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Barely wrote anything after that.
Yeah. To Kill a Mockingbird.
Barely appeared in public.
Yeah. True to Kill a Mockingbird is another one. So, yeah, but I'm definitely going to come back, do some more Jane Austen.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Other people, who have I done? I've only done one Charles Dickens, and it was a very short Christmas Carol for the Christmas episode. So I hope to come back and do another one of his longer novels.
Christmas
too,
again. Yeah. You know, Charles Dickens' Christmas Again?
Yeah, Christmas Part 2.
Yeah. And then, oh, it's bloody Christmas again, you know?
Boxing Day Carol, all that stuff.
Yeah.
All that stuff. But, yeah, this show only comes out a couple of times a month. So if people have other time and they want to listen to some other stuff, how about we talk about your great podcast, gentlemen, also out on the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sam Lawyer, got a new series of Human Ordinary coming out.
I do. Well, some episodes are already there.
Yeah, so more and more are coming out. Do you want to tell us, what can we look forward to in the new series if people aren't familiar with Human Ordinary?
So my show, it's all audio documentaries. So, you know, we try to make stories that are somewhat interesting. But really, like I was talking with a friend about it the other day, and this is going to be a great promo for the show. But the stories are often, they're a little bit boring, you know, because they're just about life.
Okay.
All right. We make documentaries about things that happen to normal people and everyday experiences, and we try to make them interesting, and we try to sort of say, you know, hey, we're all connected here. You know, we're all human.
Sounds very relatable to me.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
I'm human too.
That's right.
I'm not a half devil, half witch.
There you go. So we've got, you know, there's stories. This is going to be stories about hairdressing and why we do the things that we do. And there's sort of like a mystery from Indian Kashmir that I mentioned. And,
yeah, that sounds exciting.
The story about trains.
A story about trains. Uh-huh. Yep.
And train spotters, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So that's up. So story about crosswords and crossworders. And
that's fun. I like the idea of that. That's fun.
Yeah, so we got some things. It's going to be a good year. So there's four of us producers and episodes out every 2 weeks until about November.
Fantastic. So Human Ordinary, highly recommend you guys get on it for something a little bit different on the Planet Broadcasting Network, which I love.
Yeah, I'm a bit of that sort of that weird cousin. You know, yeah. You know, that comes in and always says things in the wrong spot. Yeah,
yeah, that's what we want.
Exactly. He comes in and everyone else is like, spend way more time on this than we do. Well done. Well done.
He's got his little projects. He's building a boat in his shed. Nah, good on him. Yeah.
Well, you've got your own little projects, Nick Mason, also on the Planet Broadcasting Network, the Weekly Planet Podcast.
Yeah.
Still bloody going strong.
Still bloody going strong. They can't kill it.
They can't kill it. I mean, now that last Marvel film came out for the time.
Yeah, that's, well, a couple of months.
We're gonna, the first phase.
We've had a few Marvel phases, but Endgame, which caps off sort of 11 years of Marvel movies, the big saga is over. So now we're gonna ramp up to the next big saga. Why would we stop? Why would anyone stop?
Well, there's billions of dollars to be made.
Yeah, but we talk about over at the Weekly Planet. We talk about your big pop culture movies, we talk about your superhero movies and your action movies and your big blockbusters and comic books and occasionally video games and stuff like that. So we have a bloody good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sam's going to be on an episode coming up, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and fantastic.
That's right.
I need to talk to James about that, but yes.
Well, we look forward to that coming out, and all the shows we've mentioned there are available at planetbroadcasting.com.
That's correct, yeah.
Well, as a lot of other of our fellow network shows, which I suggest all of them, all a lot of fun. And if you want to get in contact with me, BookCheat has a Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, which is at DoGoOnPod. Sorry, at BookCheatPod. Man, it's so funny. It's funny when I cycle in and out of doing a bit of DoGoOn today, BookCheat tomorrow. I say the wrong thing all the time. So it's at BookCheatPod, I should say, and we're BookCheatPod@gmail.com. But yeah, the main thing, if you want to suggest a book, click the link in the description of the episode and tell me why I should do it. But until next week, I'll say thank you so much for listening. And until then, I guess we'll say... goodbye.
I think we should say books forever.
Books forever.
Books forever.
You're making it a thing. You're bringing it back. Books forever. Woo.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.